Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Meet the Author on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Denny Griffin and I'll be your host for the next 45 minutes. And our call-in number, if you want to reach me or either of today's guests, is 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. And if you're on my page on Blog Talk Radio, we have a live chat room, and you can text a question or comment in to me, and I'll relay it to the guests. I'm going to start right out here because I normally give relatively brief introductions, but the nature of today's guests, I'm going to be into a little more detail. So I'm going to start out with introducing Dr. Art Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt was born in Brooklyn, New York. During the Vietnam War, he served with Helicopter Attack Squadron 3. He was officer in charge of a Seawolf detachment at Seafloat Solid Anchor on the, I'm guessing on the pronunciation, Kaumau Peninsula in 1970. Dr. Schmidt served his country's naval aviator for 22 years, during which time he received the Distinguished Flying Cross, a Bronze Star, 21 Air Medals, 2 Single Action Air Medals, Presidential Unit Citation, Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry, and a Vietnamese Air Medal. He flew 808 combat missions during his 3 tours in Vietnam. Dr. Schmidt is a qualified officer of the deck. Underway on the USS Yorktown, he has 500 carrier landings and 7,400 flight hours total. Dr. Schmidt received his PhD in 1976. He instructed civilian astronauts Owen Garriott of Skylab 3 and Harrison H. Jack Schmidt, Apollo 17, one of the last men on the moon. He's worked in the corporate world as vice president of human resources for major corporations. In 1988, he established his human resources management business, Business Team Builders. And for the past 20 years, he served as a vocational expert witness for Social Security Disability. His previously published books are A War with No Name, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, Survivor's Story, and The Man I Didn't Know, stories of wives and families of veterans who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're going to talk about his new book today, They Thought They Were Invincible, or We Thought We Were Invincible. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Meet the Author.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
And we have a second guest today, a co-guest, if you will, and I will introduce her, Dr. Catherine Platoni. She is a colonel in the Medical Services Corps, United States Army Reserve, and the chief psychologist for the Army Reserve and National Guard. Dr. Platoni has been a practicing clinical psychologist for 25 years. In her military career, she has served as commander of the 1972nd Medical Detachment at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, from 2003 to 2004, where combat stress control became a critical element of the Joint Task Force mission in support of Operation Enduring Freedom in the global war on terrorism. Having volunteered to return to active duty within weeks of her redeployment from Joint Task Force Gitmo, Dr. Platoni deployed to Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, holding the position of Deputy Commander of Clinical Services for the 55th Medical Company in Baghdad and 7 subsequent locations, and finally as Officer in Charge of Team R Ramadi, situated in the heart of the insurgency and during times of intensive combat. Upon the conclusion of her tour of duty in the wartime theater, Dr. Platoni reported to the home of the infantry, Fort Benning, Georgia, for an additional 6-month mission in order to provide for the reintegration services of the 2nd Battalion, 69th Armored Regiment, due to elevated numbers of psychological casualties among combat armed soldiers. In addition, since the 9/11 tragedy and attacks on the United States, Dr. Platoni also voluntarily deployed to New York City on 2 occasions in order to provide disaster, mental health, and critical incident stress debriefing services to members of the New York City Police Department. Dr. Platoni, welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you very much, and for the honor of being on this show with somebody of the magnitude of Dr. Art Schmidt. Wow.
It's exciting.
Yes, it is.
Dr. Art, you you mentioned that you had a couple of thank yous you wanted to get into, and then we'll talk about your book. So why don't you go ahead and take it over?
Okay, thank you very much. The last piece in my book, We Thought We Were Invincible, A True Stories of Invincible Warriors, there's a poem written by my wife, Marilyn's granddaughter, Nicole Smith. She's 14 years old, and she wrote an incredibly insightful poem about Vietnam. And she has infinite wisdom from a young girl who is so many generations removed from the travesty. The other person I'd like to talk about, I want to thank Chief Petty Officer Bill Rutledge and Admiral Kevin Delaney, who was my co-pilot for a brief time in Vietnam. Both of them went the extra mile and were instrumental in getting me awarded a Distinguished Flying Cross 32 years after the fact, and it was delivered the day before we invaded Iraq. And I thank you both, and Bill has done a remarkable job in helping other guys in HAL 3 get much-deserved medals that were downgraded along the way. My book starts off with the prologue. We talk about Dr. Harrison H. Jack Schmidt, Apollo 17, one of the last men on the moon. I wrote him and I said, send me an invincible moment. And he wrote back and he said, the only invincible moment he knew was when I let him solo the helicopter. But the real story was I had gone down there to see him go to the moon and I had a three-hour hold. And he took a nap while he's laying on his back in the rocket. Now, that's invincible. And one of the things I've done now is I'm a volunteer at Patriots Point in Mount Pleasant in South Carolina. And I flew off of Yorktown, and I'm able to tell my story there. And it's been an incredibly cathartic experience in talking to people and telling my story about my time in HAL 3 on my third tour in Vietnam. And it's really been helpful. I had one young woman came by, and I showed her the cover to my first book, A War With No Name, and it's me on the cover 38 years ago. And the woman said, boy, you look just like a movie star. She says, where was I when I was looking around? And her husband said, you weren't born. Colonel Linda Stokes Crow, also a clinical psychologist, served in Iraq, Kuwait, and Qatar. And Sheeps put an article in there also. I interviewed in Savannah a young woman Army officer. She's flying Black Hawk helicopters, which is a pretty impressive helicopter. And she had two tours in Iraq, and I told her to send me an invincible story. And she said there she was flying at night over Baghdad, and rocket-propelled grenades were coming at her, and tracer bullets, every fifth bullet and the 50 cals were coming up. And her statement was she thought she was in a Star Wars movie. Keep in mind that she was a 25-year-old young warrant officer. Also in the book, I have lots of good stories from HAL 3 Seawolf guys. And Ralph Christopher, who's been on your show, has written five books, and he has put some article in this book. And I have SEALs and Bob Stoner, one of the river rats. And, of course, my door gunner is Mike Dobson and a few other guys and the guys that have saved me more than once. I have a story in there about a night auto rotation, and I have several airline pilot stories. And also I have a note in there that was taken from Admiral Delaney's speech at one of the HAL 3 reunions 4 years ago, which cites all of the medals that were awarded to HAL 3 during its time in Vietnam, and it's the most highly decorated combat unit in all time. Let's see. Oh, I also have a long story in there by Admiral Bill Terry, who was a friend of mine, and we flew together years ago. But he went in the Navy as a naval aviation cadet and left as an admiral, and he is highly decorated.
Dr. Art, how long did it take you to put this book together? I mean, you had to contact people and get their stories and so on.
This one took about 15 months. The first book, A War With No Name, took me 10 years because it really wasn't supposed to be a book. And the second book, which is co-authored with me with Marie Leduc, that's a funny story. I was at a book signing on my first book, and this woman comes up to me. She says, Dr. Schmidt, how would you feel about writing about the families of veterans who are affected with post-traumatic stress. And I said, I don't think so. I said, you know, it took me 10 years to write this one. Well, I went home that night, mocked up a cover, came up with the title, The Man I Didn't Know, The Stories of Vietnam Veterans' Families who are Affected by Post-Traumatic Stress, and I wrote the first chapter. And then about 3 months later, I was at another book signing, and this couple was standing in front of me, and I said to them, some woman suggested that I write this book, and I said, I've started it. I said, but I don't know how to get a hold of her. And she says, it's me, Marie LeDuc. And I said, well, would you consider writing the foreword to the book? And after I got to know her, come to find out that she had been doing a lot of counseling with the wives. And after I got to know her, I said, how would you like to co-author the book? And she said, I would love to, because it's been my lifelong dream. So we put that one out in about a year, and she's been doing a lot of speaking engagements. And Kathy, Dr. Patoni, has three wonderful stories in here, and she has turned me on to another one, Vietnam Trilogies, and it's helped. The gent that wrote it was saying he went back to Vietnam, which I would never do, and he said he was doing pretty good until somebody, one of the Vietnamese kids, tried to sell him dog tags. And that,
I
have one other funny story. My psychologist that I'm in treatment for my post-traumatic stress owned an airplane, and he had a cancellation one day, and he says, would you like to go fly? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I used to go out to the airplane and count the number of engines and divide by two, and if it doesn't come out even, I don't go, but I went anyway. and we flew over to Yorktown, and I looked down and I said, I cannot believe my blood is on the deck there. And I've landed 500 times on air and 200 at night. And when I got back and landed, I went home and I told my wife, I said, that's it. I don't need to fly anymore. It is out of my system. But
that was it, huh?
Yeah, that was it. I didn't have to do it anymore. But
Colonel Platoni, now, a question I've just got to ask is, based on all your experience here with the veterans and so on, and with the combat troops, how big a problem would you say this PTSD is today?
One of huge proportions, if you consider the fact that the number one factor that precipitates the onset of PTSD is combat exposure, and our troops are being deployed over and over and over again. It's pretty much a given that you're going to come back with some kind of psychological problems. It's impossible not to, with the kinds of things you're exposed to in the wartime theater. So according to the RAND Corporation study, which was published back in, I believe, April, we have an estimated 320,000 war wounded, if you include both physical and psychological wounds. Now, who's going to take care of them?
How big is the psychological the unit to help these people? I mean, is it adequately staffed, or do you need more?
We need many, many more. We have wonderfully trained mental health professionals throughout the VA, in some cases, and throughout the armed forces, but there's not enough to go around. And the problem is one of just huge proportions, and we haven't been real good until recently in teaching people how to take a psychological toolkit, if you will, into the war zone to help them get through. But even with that, what they're exposed to over and over and over again cannot help but impact you in extraordinarily painful ways.
Is PTSD, I'm not familiar with it, which will be obvious from some of my questions, is PTSD actually curable, or is it something you control?
In my opinion is that it's something you can control. I have never seen any of my patients, no matter what the precipitating factor is, whether that's a catastrophic car accident or Hurricane Katrina, or the loss of a family member in a particularly tragic manner, I have never seen anybody recover completely. I think there are always remnants, but people do get better and do go on about their lives and function in a wonderful way in many instances. But without treatment, the likelihood of that is diminished.
And there are different levels or degrees of PTSD, are there?
I would say that, well, we have acute stress disorder and we have post-traumatic stress disorder. And let me see if I can do a somewhat fair job of defining that for you. Post-traumatic stress disorder can be considered severe and chronic, or it can be more acute, and many of the symptoms can resolve over time. But again, the likelihood with multiple deployments is it's just not there. So
I have one comment, if I may. I have one comment. When I started working on the second book, I told Marie Leduc, my co-author, I said, well, I only have PTSD a little. And she said, you don't have it just a little, you have it. And so I got into treatment then.
And yeah, you either have it or you don't. That is absolutely true. And there are, you know, variations in severity. I would say if the symptoms last less than 3 months, that would be acute post-traumatic stress disorder. If it's chronic, that's 3 months or more. And most people experience some degree of the same problems for a lifetime. And there are so many triggers in the environment that can bring back those traumatic memories. So you tend to relive it.
Can I ask you a question? I co-authored a book a while back with a Vietnam combat vet. He was an Army Ranger, I believe. And anyway, he had PTSD, and he was sent through, it was through the VA, I believe, to what do I want to call it, a course or a seminar or something. And he said that he and I think there were 11 people in this particular group, and they were, it was a week or two program, and they went to a facility and stayed there, and they were evaluated and so on. And his particular analysis that was done on him was that of the 11 people, he was the second most likely to kill somebody. Does that make sense? Do they have such a thing, or is that, am I mistaken on what?
Oh, you're right on the money.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Apparently in his case. I was a little nervous, in fact, around him because he always carried a gun. And I'm thinking, geez, you know, he told me that, and I got a little edgy. I wasn't sure, you know, whether it meant he might snap at any second or if I could say something offensive or that he thought was offensive and trigger him. But anyway, we became comfortable together after a while. But initially, when he told me that, I was a little bit tense.
I would say most people are not likely to, quote, snap, but with the right circumstances and you mix it with alcohol or other substances, you can get somebody who can get pretty out of control. That is the vast minority.
Okay. So he might be an exception, I mean, on the far end?
He might be an exception on the far end. I mean, I carry a knife with me all the time. I never did that before. But
okay.
You learn in the context of the wartime theater that you never feel safe and the world is a place not to be trusted, and that's something that's very hard to put aside.
Now,
if I may make
Gerard,
sure. another comment, I spoke to the Blue Star mothers one time, and one of the mothers came up to me and she said, well, my son is a Ranger and he only goes over for 90 days and then he comes home for 6 months, and then he goes back for 90 days. She said, what's the chances of him getting PTSD? And I said, well, I mean, absolutely just right up there. And then the president of the Blue Star Brothers, she said, my son come back from Iraq, and she said he can't hold a job, and he's dropped out of college. Is there any, you think there might be a link there? I mean, people just are not aware of it. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I shouldn't say I hadn't heard of it, but I up until I got involved with this other gentleman I was just telling you about, I wasn't that in tune with it. I wasn't that familiar with it. I'd heard the term, but didn't really understand it. And it's really something, and I suspect there are a lot of people who were in my situation, maybe had heard the term, but didn't really know what it means. And so I think there are a lot of us in this country who are ignorant when it comes to PTSD and what it's all about.
Well, until the Vietnam War, we hadn't even heard of shell shock or battle fatigue or the fact that catastrophic life experiences can be harmful psychologically and physically as well. If you just look at some of the recent research that's coming out, there's some link to cardiac symptoms. And if you look at the amount of adrenaline that people who have PTSD tend to live with, they're always frequently in a state of a complete adrenaline rush. That's going to affect your heart functioning. So from both physical and psychological standpoints, it's something that we're just beginning to really appreciate.
Now, I've seen quite frequently on the various news shows of the way some of the physically injured veterans, what's almost miraculous. I mean, you've got people with artificial limbs that are able to remain in the service and so forth. Now, when I was in back in the 60s, I don't think that would have happened. I can't imagine that. Has the psychological advances kept up with the physical?
No.
It's treatment-wise.
No. I mean, and I think a lot of that is the lack of availability of funding to do research, although that has increased in the last few years, and the fact that a lot of people just don't appreciate the fact that because you can't see this wound, it doesn't bleed, it doesn't exist. So it's an awareness issue. It's a public education issue, and it's a stigmatizing issue as well.
And, Colonel, do you share my feeling that there are a number of us citizens who aren't aware of it, and in some cases don't really want to be because we don't want to hear bad news, or we don't want to hear
right.
things
who
that frustrate us.
Right, have that label, sure, absolutely. Absolutely, but, you know, Viktor Frankl said it perfectly in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. PTSD and combat exposure and battle fatigue and combat stress are normal reactions to extraordinarily abnormal life circumstances. You cannot help but be plagued by some kind of effect when you're exposed to something that horrific.
Dr. Artner, you were in treatment for your PTSD. Is that something you have to continue in, or are you finished now? Or
Well, my psychologist says that I'm functioning pretty well, considering that I've written 3 books and got a PhD after all this. And
I'll say.
But I still can't watch fireworks. I mean, I was on New York on the 4th of July, but I didn't go out at night, and I just locked myself up on the 4th of July. And one of my psychologists came up with a scheme to help me with my road rage, and that's I think all the traffic lights are like 9 minutes long, and so I my other psychologist, Dr. Bonnie, she said, "Oh, get some pennies, and when you go through a green light, take a penny out of your ashtray and put it in a glass, and then every time you hit a red light, take it out and put it back in the ashtray." And I've been doing it. It takes my mind off the long lights. And then she said, get a stopwatch. And I've been timing the lights. And the longest light in town is like a minute and 40 seconds. And after a week of doing that with the pennies, I wind up with more pennies than I had to put back. So there's more green lights, which helps calm me down. And it's been a good therapeutic tool for me. And we just kind of came up with that.
That's ingenious.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I might do that myself.
It also helps when I drive with my wife. I have this startle effect because when a car comes up alongside, I just jump all the time. And so I started counting traffic lights, and that keeps me away from jumping when she makes a turn that I think is inappropriate. And so it's helped there. But and my wife can relate the story. We were in a New York restaurant, and a Vietnamese busboy dropped a tray of dishes behind me, and I grabbed him and threw him up against the wall. Unfortunately, I didn't wind up in jail, but, I mean, Vietnamese should not make loud noises behind me. And then I did a Social Security case in Oregon, and we had this wonderful judge. And it was a woman who was a Vietnamese migrant farm worker, and her husband was sitting behind me, and I knew he was a VC, but... And I testified, and I got through, and the judge says, "Can I see you in my chambers?" And I said, well, what did I do wrong? And he says, "I promised never to do that to you again." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "I could see you were visibly distressed." I said, "I thought I did pretty good." He says, "No, you were visibly distressed." So, but wow. Stuff like that. But let me talk 1 second about my VA experience here, because I know Kathy is up against the wall here with what's going on in the wars we have now. But I met a guy at happy hour one day, Kevin Wethrow. He was the biomedical engineer for the VA hospital. And I was in treatment at that time for PTSD. And he says, well, why don't you go to the VA hospital and maybe you can get some disability? And I said, I don't want to have anything to do with the VA hospital. Well, I went up. That finally talked me into it. And I went up, and it was absolutely a wonderful experience. And the Charleston VA hospital is without a doubt one of the cleanest places I've seen. And there's a lot of people waiting. But within 5 months, I was awarded disability and a $6,000 hearing aid, which I don't use all the time, but I can't hear too much with a 50 caliber machine gun out my ears. But I mean, in 5 months I got VA disability, and it was it's been a wonderful experience.
Well, that's nice to hear, because you hear some horror stories, or have in the past anyway, about the VA. What's encouraging? And you say this was located where in South Carolina?
Say again?
The VA hospital you're referring to, that was whereabouts?
In Charleston, yeah.
Charleston.
It's in Charleston. Okay. But, I mean, you can tell that they're overwhelmed, but they do a pretty darn good job of getting everybody. I don't go there for medical treatment, but and they have a gentleman called Dave Weston who actually works for the governor, I guess. He's a VA advocacy person, and he has been incredible help to me to help me with my claims, and so I'm real pleased with the VA the way they've been operating here.
Well, that's good, and you know, just let me throw this out, and we'll get back to the book. I don't want to tie up the whole time here on other things, but there's talk now. I'm a news junkie. There's talk now that some of the troops that, if we can withdraw some of the troops from Iraq at some point, that now we need to beef up Afghanistan because there's some additional problems there, which means if the force size of our force doesn't increase, a lot of those people who are withdrawn from Iraq are probably going to end up in Afghanistan at a fairly short period of time. From the purposes of their mental health, I mean, it seems somebody told me the other day, said, well, at least they'll have a change of scenery. It won't be as bad, but you're still confronting people trying to kill you and atrocities and all this kind of thing. So I'm not sure. I'd like to hear from both of you what you think if just a change of scenery going from Iraq to Afghanistan is somehow a mental health bonus.
Hell no. I don't see how it could be. You're just going from one war zone to another. The other one has more mountains. What's the difference?
Right. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, who would make a remark like that? Oh, my
well,
God.
Yeah, I was. I didn't want to get in an argument, but I couldn't imagine the logic there. It just didn't seem right to me, but I thought I'd run it by you folks when I had the chance. So a combat zone is a combat zone.
Exactly.
The geography might be different,
right.
But the mission basically is the same thing. What do you think about that, Dr. Art? Do you agree?
It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's snowing or hot. And I was sure glad I was where it was hot and not snowing. But anyway, you know, and Vietnam is just beautiful, but I'll never go back, and I don't think changing scenery will help. Let me ask Dr. Patoni a question, if I may.
Sure.
In the Vietnam trilogies, they talked about in Vietnam, and I didn't realize this, that they were trying to keep the combat people close to they could of where they went into the hospital or went into to get some help, and then send them back just right away because they thought that was good therapeutically to get them back in the battle. And I don't know what the policy is now, and can you comment on that? Or I mean, you know, you're familiar with the book. I know you contributed to that.
That is the policy. The principles of proximity, immediacy, expectancy, and simplicity. You treat at the front, of course, everywhere is the front lines in this day and age, and you get people back into performing their missions as soon as possible. That's not always a great thing. For the most part, you communicate the expectancy that you will get through this, you will be able to perform your mission, you're not going to be non-functional or dysfunctional, you will survive this, and we will give you the help you need to make that happen. For soldiers who are so devastated that they literally cannot perform their missions and their symptoms are so severe that there's just no way they can go back to battle or perform any of their missions, they have to be med-evacuated out of theater. And there's a real conundrum there because once they get back, there's so much survivor guilt having left their buddies. So, but in many cases, these soldiers, it's a danger to put them back in because they put everybody else at risk as well as themselves. So, but the primary principle is that it's a psychological support or mental health support is made available, we are to be a force multiplier and get as many people back to the battlefield, which is really everywhere, as possible.
Dr. Platone, would you, I've got your articles in front of me that you wrote, but I would like you to expound a little on what you contributed to this Invincible book here.
Well, the first article is called The War Room, and I wrote that while I was still at Fort Benning. I guess the reason I wrote it at first was to try to put my own experiences and an impact statement about those experiences on paper, and I had been asked to write something for the Ohio Psychological Association. I'm now a resident of Ohio, although an original native New Yorker, Dr. Art. Thank you.
So is Denny.
All right. I thought I picked that up. But at first they didn't like the article. They thought it wasn't research-based. Well, you know, when you don't have anything to write on and you haven't had a shower for 6 weeks, finding something to write on isn't real important. And we didn't conduct research because there was no forum for doing that. We were there to help our troops. So I was quite offended that was the response. So I resubmitted again and had a different team of reviewers, and they loved it and made me the plenary speaker for the yearly convention. So that was the history of the first one. The second article about survivorship in the wartime theater, I wrote to try to help people understand that the camaraderie, the esprit de corps, the mutual support, the relationships among soldiers is probably the most powerful of all forces in terms of healing. And I also wanted to talk about what soldiers sacrifice, or any people in the armed forces sacrifice, particularly in the war zone, and that they would go to the ends of the earth and lay down their lives for their buddies. So it was important to convey that concept to many people who will never appreciate that because they haven't served in the military. So I wanted to make a statement about that. In the third article, I wrote for Dr. Art about mental health in the trenches. So, and I was honored to be even asked to submit anything to this book. So that was pretty spectacular for me.
Well, my mental health revolves around, I wouldn't go to a reunion for HAL 3 for years. And finally I went a while back, and now I wouldn't miss one because it is so rewarding. And my door gunners are there. And I said to my door gunners, I said, you know, how come you guys are so young? And they said, well, remember, we were 18 and you were 35.
There you go.
But these three articles are a great contribution to the book, and mental health in the trenches is, and my fame to claim to fame is that I had 24 guys working for me, and I brought them all back alive. I mean, and they brought me back alive, so it was tough but a wonderful experience.
Doesn't get any better than that.
Oh, 100% return. That's you're right, Colonel. It doesn't get any better than that.
Against insurmountable odds, too.
Yeah, Dr. Renner, this book just came out within the past couple of weeks, right?
Right.
And can you give us or the listeners some information, such as website or anything, where they can get more information about the book or order the book or more information about you?
Sure. Go to authorhouse.com, which Ralph Christopher turned me on to, and then go to bookstore. And then go to Dr. Art Schmidt. The book will come up, and if you click on the cover, it will give a biography, Nicole Smith's poem, and a few reviews about the book. And then you can order the book from there. My other two books, the one that Marie LeDuc and I did, The Man I Didn't Know, the stories of veterans' wives and of veterans who suffer from PTSD. That one can be found on Amazon.com. And then A War With No Name is also Amazon.com. So that's how they can, people can get those off the website.
Okay, and Dr. Schmidt spells his last name S-C-H-M-I-T-T, correct?
That's correct. And that,
okay,
so does Jack Schmidt, the last one of the last men on the moon.
Okay, and you're no relation, I take it.
No, absolutely not. But they did give him to me because of the press involved, and we had a good time with it.
Well, good. And the now, to research for your books, all of them, you know, I mean, all your Vietnam books. Did you have to rely at all on the government for information, for statistics? Did you have to file a Freedom of Information request or anything like that?
Nope, I did not. One other thing I do want to mention, I have two stories in there, father and son stories. A Navy corpsman, hospital corpsman, Bruce Durden, was in Vietnam, and his son was serving, or is serving now, Christopher, is a hospital corpsman serving in Iraq. And it's interesting to see the way the father and the son have wound up in almost the same different wars, but doing the same thing. And my grandson, I just found out, has gone back to Iraq for the third time.
Wow. Now you also had you interviewed veterans and other people for your books. What did you find in the way of cooperation? Were most people pretty anxious to talk about their experiences, or was it tough to get information?
And I think Dr. Patoni can back me up on this. Some of it flows real well, and then some of it, the people will not talk about it at all. And for me, telling my story on the Yorktown and at Patriots Point in the Vietnam fire base is very cathartic for me and rewarding. And you know, I must have had in the month I've been there, so I must have had 300 people thank me for my service. I had one woman who's pretty well dressed, considering it was like 100 degrees up there. And I told my story, and she came over and clasped my hand, and she thanked me so much for what I had done and my service, and she cried. And I just almost lost it right there.
Yeah.
Very emotional time, huh?
Yeah.
Colonel, now, Dr. Art said that some people were very open and candid, others didn't want to talk at all. Is talking about these things a good idea, or is it harmful?
Best form of therapy, absolutely. And if you look at the tried and true and recommended therapies used by the military and the VA, the exposure therapies, talking about it is an absolute. And I think people are afraid they'll be stigmatized if they talk about their experiences. But you know what? That's a very powerful healing thing, and cathartic is the right word.
Did you find, Dr. Art, and I found this in a couple of the books I've done when I've done the research, that I've had people who I wanted to interview and I've reached out to as a stranger and explained what I was doing. I was researching for a book. And I had a few that wouldn't talk to me because they were afraid I was going to make money on it and they wanted money. Did anybody pull that on you or tell you that if they gave you a story, they wanted to get paid?
Yeah, no one has ever done that. Not at all. I was fortunate. I was doing Social Security cases in Savannah, so I just walked across the street to the Hunter Army base, and I found all the helicopter pilots. And so instead of setting up interviews, I would just go to the mall and sit down and have lunch, and I could talk to any Army person I wanted to. And they were more than happy to open up. But,
you belong to various organizations and veterans organizations, and I've heard other people refer to it as a brotherhood. Is that pretty much what your take is on it, that the guys are pretty closely knit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last reunion, you know, I was just making a joke, and we were sitting at the table with all my organizers and my guys, and I said, I just got a call from the president. he wants me to go to Iraq. I said, does anybody want to go? And I said, we're ready.
No surprise there.
Colonel, can I, for a minute, talking about your volunteer work with the New York City PD after 9/11, what did you find that obviously was very emotional for all Americans, but the people who probably lost close friends, maybe relatives. I know there were some cases where you had fathers and sons and brothers and sisters working for the PD.
Yeah.
How did that compare to a combat veteran? I mean, was there any difference in the way you handled or approached these people?
Same approach. Okay. Same approach. There's the same brotherhood and sisterhood, and the catastrophic experience was pretty much a wartime experience. That was a real battlefield there. So, I mean, the settings were different in which we did our work and did our debriefings, but the response to that was much the same.
Do you think that the city of New York or New York State maybe had some involvement too, did a pretty good job in trying to help their personnel?
Initially, yes. At least in NYPD, it was mandated that everybody, whether you were on scene or not, had to go through a formal debriefing process with peers and mental health personnel. Unfortunately, we had a lot of rogue people who just showed up on scene who had no training and didn't have any idea what they were doing and had no business being there. This was all done very, very formally and in a very organized manner. And then there was individual support available, and this went on for almost a year afterwards, and the peer support continues. New York Fire Department did not do the same. They did not mandate debriefings. They had counselors available, but nothing formal was in place at that time. So I haven't been back to Ground Zero since 2003. But I do stay in touch with some of the NYPD officers, and they continue to provide tremendous mutual support for one another, which is, you know, the best form of treatment that you're going to get.
That once you've been through something like this, we mentioned a few minutes ago that talking about it is good. You need to get it out there. I heard, especially initially, within the first few months after 9/11, there were obviously various scams being, you know, they come out of the woodwork, different people at times like that, trying to make a buck on things. And several people wrote books almost immediately that, you know, had lost a loved one or something. And I'm just wondering, is there any, like, time frame you should wait before? Obviously, if you're in this for money, you need to strike when the iron's hot, so to speak, and while the topic is out there. But is it a good idea to be writing books? And does that have any therapeutic effect if you're in it for the money as opposed to just talking about it?
Well, I'm not in it for the money, but it sure is therapeutic.
I would agree. Writing those articles was real therapeutic.
Listen, we're down to just the last minute or so in the show. Dr. Art, before we finish up, just one more time, would you give out about how to find more information about you, order your book on the Author House and so on?
Thank you for the opportunity. On the We Thought We Were Invincible, the True Stories of Invincible Warriors, which is a conglomeration of wonderful stories of people who are really invincible, and a few of my invincible stories, too. But that one, you can go to authorhouse.com, then go to bookstore, and then go to Dr. Art Schmidt, and then click on the cover, and it will give you a bio and reviews. And once again, it will show you Nicole Smith's incredible Vietnam poem from a 14-year-old with incredible insight. And the other two books, A War With No Name and The Man I Didn't Know, you can go to amazon.com. And that's the way to get them. Thank you very much for your support, Denny.
Oh, you're welcome. And Colonel, now that we've talked about PTSD a little bit, do you have any favorite websites or where people who want to learn more about it could go and get some accurate information?
Oh, yes. One of the best ones is www.ncptsd.org, or just do a Google search for the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. that is one of the best places to start. There's also some invaluable information on the Deployment Health newsletter website. Just Google Deployment Health, and the IAVA, which is headed up by Paul Rykoff. I believe it's the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Association. They do some wonderful work in terms of pointing people in the right direction. So that's a great place to start. But I think probably the National Center for PTSD does a fabulous job of providing materials both for clinicians and for the public.
Okay, we just ran out of time. What we're discussing now will be on the archive show, but we stopped the live broadcast. I want to thank you both very much for being on the show today and for your service, both past and present. Dr. Arc, thank you very much for being with me, and Colonel Platone, thank you.
And
thank you for the honor and privilege of doing this show and for getting to be on the same show with Dr. Art Schmidt. Wow.
and I feel the same way. Thank you very much, Kathy. And we'll keep. I told Denny about our crusade at AMA is going to come after our PhDs, and he laughed. But that's unbelievable stuff.
Man, I'm coming armed to that one.
Maybe we'll do another show on that someday.
Oh,
well, I hope it doesn't get that
far. On that one.
Okay. Thanks again, and you folks have a great day. Thanks a million
thank
for
you.
Being on.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dennis. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, again, we're out of time here, but I want to thank my guests, Dr. Art Schmidt and Colonel Catherine Platone, for being with me. And we'll talk to you next time. And in the meantime, have a great day. Bye-bye.